Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane. Follow me on Twitter at TheRealMarkLane, managing editor of the Texans Wire. Make TexansWire.USAToday.com your homepage and just hit F5 all the time. Because if you do that, it drives up our page views. And then that means that John Crumpler, who joins me on the program every week, can get a bonus. Isn't that right, John?
Mark, I'm not sure it works that way. I think you might be the one that pulls in the bonus. Very well deserved.
Yeah, I don't know.
For those of you that don't know me, my name is John Crumpler. I am the lead analyst and Energizer Bunny of the Texans Wire, and I'm excited to talk some football tonight.
Yeah, no kidding. How many episodes have we done to this point? 25 of them, it appears, and now we're finally getting to talk about football. It's almost like we were an expansion team, and, you know, now we're finally getting to go out there and play some ball.
Are you sure we're not an expansion team, Mark?
Yeah, I think we're an expanding team. That's for sure, because with Jordan Pun and Brian Bearfield coming to the Texans Wire, that makes things exciting, and
that was clever.
I really enjoy.
That was very clever. I was talking about the Texans. You took it back to the Texans Wire. Well played.
Yeah. Yep. All right, so let's go ahead and get into it. Damian Pierce, 5 carries, 49 yards, and if you factor out that run, the 20-yard run to start off his career, even though it was preseason, 7.25 yards a carry. Is it time to just say he's RB1?
It's probably not time yet, but I think that with the way things are going, Mark, with what we're hearing from practice, you and I were on the ground on Wednesday. That's all the buzz is about Damian Pierce. When you watch the preseason game Saturday, he looks like he's got a different gear, a different level of acceleration, the balance of which he hits the holes. I think that he is going to be RB1 by the end of it. And that's not a slight towards Marlon Mack or a slight towards Rex Burkfield. I believe they can be reliable contributors in this offense, good pieces towards a running back by committee. But that committee kind of needs a lead dog, and Pierce has got the most bark. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that at some point in September, he's going to be the guy, and he's going to get the majority of the carries. I think they may still have Marlon Mack come in, for a series, and you got Rex Burkhead to help out with some of the passing plays. It sounds like they're using some, 21 personnel too, trying to get both backs in the backfield, which you would figure would be Damian Pierce for some pass protection, and then Rex Burkhead for, just some flares out of the backfield and stuff.
No, I think they're going to try to use that group to, in a lot of different ways. I agree, like, the other two guys will have a role, and they're going to do their best to get everyone on the field, but no one looks the same as Damian Pierce. Also, did I say Rex Burkfield a few minutes ago?
You did, but I was thinking that's kind of clever, because that is kind of what the Texans had last year, was they basically had running backs in the Burkfield.
It wasn't the backfield. It was the Burkfield. It was a Rex Burkhead-designed offense.
Yes, and that's how you get to have 3.4 yards per carry, 83.6 rushing yards per game, both of which were the lowest in the NFL.
Well, it's a new day, Mark, and I feel like a rookie running back could be a big part of that.
Yeah, and it was just exciting to see him make those cuts, have that vision, have that burst, and even the nastiness of running some guys over. I think that when you look at the identities of franchises, You know, in Chicago, you think of running backs because you had Gale Sayers and Walter Payton, linebackers, because of Dick Butkus, and, you know, Mike Singletary. I don't need to name, you know, Lance Briggs. And you look at the 49ers, kind of their legacies, quarterbacks, same with the Packers. And I think 20 years in, one of the identities of the Houston Texans is a running back because of Arian Foster. So to have Pierce just make it fun again in the backfield and in the running game, I think Texans fans are habituated to that because of how much success the team had with Arian Foster.
Yeah, and I tweeted about this last week that you never see how hungry the Houston fan base is until every day, I swear, it's the same highlight reel of Arian Foster, or it's look at how good Arian Foster or Ben Tate were together, or it's look at that Arian Foster playoff run. The city loves a good running back. He was really probably the second offensive star after Andre Johnson, and obviously the first great back. And I almost feel bad for Damian Pierce that he's going to have these monstrous expectations leveled. But here he comes, another young guy, similar to Arian Foster at Tennessee. Damian Pierce was underutilized at Florida, where we don't really know what he can do with volume, but we see what he can do in spurts. And it's got me pumped up because, Mark, this is a completely different offense with Damian Pierce. It would make the offensive lines easier. They might not have to be perfect. The picture and the passing game would look better for Davis Mills. And even the safety game, just for guys like Brandon Cooks and Nico Collins to get over the top. Pierce could change everything. And I don't want to put too much on a rookie, but that's how I'm feeling.
Yeah, and that's why I don't think it's putting too much on him because he wasn't highly touted. It's not like he was taken in the first round, you know, instead of Kenyon Green or something like that. He was kind of like Arian Foster, although he was undrafted, but in the sense that, all right, here's day three and here's a guy just in the mid rounds. Okay. And that's how he gets to start his career, as opposed to this top 100 pick that's going to help turn around the franchise. Like with Jalen Petrie, he's got some of those expectations because he is a 37th overall pick, but it's kind of balanced out because he's a local kid. He came from Baylor, most importantly, Stafford High School. So, you know, that, but with Pierce, he can just blend, he can just do his job. And really, the only people that have kind of a microscope on him are Texans fans jonesing for a good running game. I mean, he doesn't have all these big expectations to meet, really.
Yeah, that's fair. I do think that it's partially elevated, his expectations, that is, by virtue of the real vacuum of talent that we've had at running back. David Johnson, obviously, not that he wore the number 31, but a lot of people hoped that he would be the answer to really provide some spice, some substance to that running back room. He didn't do it. It's been a long time. And then you take that into account with the rest of the group that currently is here is pretty lackluster. And Mark, I'll ask you this. This is going to be a good way to put it. If you did not follow the Texans draft, would you think that Damian Pierce was a fourth round pick?
Who?
Is that your answer?
That's what I mean, is I'd be like, who? Because I saw, unless it was Luke Easterling with Draft Wire or Doug Fair with Touchdown Wire, I mean, Damian Pierce would get lost on a lot of rookie lists coming out of the draft. So that's really what I think is, you'd be like, who, Damian who? And then, oh, that's where the Florida kid ended up? Well, yeah, huh. Well, He didn't do much at Florida, so yeah, good luck to him.
I don't know. I feel like Dameon Pierce had a good bit of hype. I guess every rookie has some hype in the draft. Every analyst is going to pick their guys, and there's enough analysts that at some point everybody is someone's guy. But Pierce did feel like a huge Senior Bowl climber that we went into the Senior Bowl kind of seeing him as a one-dimensional in between the tackles, put him on the goal line back, and he came out of the Senior Bowl as, hey, this guy has surprisingly nice hands and is excellent in pass coverage. He showed a little bit more burst than we expected on film. There are some people who will have real expectations for Pierce, and we might be some of them.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that we are the Dameon Pierce bandwagon at this point, selling expectations. Promo code John Crumpler at checkout.
I don't want to be the promo code, Mark. This can be Jordan's guy. Promo code Jordan. Jordan was
about promo code Jordan. Yeah. Well, one guy who I don't think has ever worn a pair of Jordans in his life, unless it was sponsored by his high school or his college, is Davis Mills. And he didn't really, in terms of like athletic footwear, he looked more like and one in those first two drives against the Saints in the first preseason game. Three passes all completed for 14 yards, but it just looked like the same old Davis Mills check down. What do you make of that?
I mean, I was not overly concerned about the Davis Mills. I know the check down storyline has been one of the bigger ones of camp, and then we get to the first preseason game, and that's what it looks like all of a sudden. But I wasn't super worried. It looked like a very conservative game plan from Pep Hamilton. Even Lovie Smith got the chance to talk about it afterwards that, you know, the first week of the preseason is not the time to say, look, this is our new offense, this is what we're doing. It's really about getting guys acclimated to live football, and especially when you get put in, I believe it was 2nd and 12, and then you throw a screen pass and it's 3rd and 14. They're not going to unload the playbook for those 3rd and long situations. That's the kind of things you want to save for the regular season. I have no problem just getting Mills out there for some live football. I would like to see some more of the playbook in the Los Angeles game. Ask him to take chances that you're not right now, because, I mean, I think you owe it to Mills to get him that experience before things really kick up. But right now, I'm not worried. What about you, Mark?
To me, it just kind of played to who he is in terms of you can't go broke taking a profit. And like I said, I mean, that's who he is. And I think that may be the perfect quarterback for Lovie Smith, because he's not going to have a bunch of giveaways. He's going to protect the football, play the field position game, and then that just takes kind of the pressure off of the defense of, well, you know, here we got to defend 27 yards to the goal. So, you know, let's get out there. So I think it was just more of who he is, but I don't think it was too concerning because, hey, Brandon Cooks wasn't out there, for example.
Exactly.
You just had elements of the offense, first team offense, that weren't exactly in place. So I don't think it was it's like a combo of it's not concerning, but also I think that is kind of who Davis Mills is going to be, but you can still have success with it as a football team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Brandon Cooks point is a very important one. Even if, let's say you are upset about this week, I think it's even harder to be upset in the context of the Houston Texans offense. Let's be honest, there's not a lot going for it. It's going to be an offense, at least as it stands, and I think guys are going to take steps forward this season, and there's going to be different ways to look at this offense as it develops. But right now it does look like an offense is going to have to work really, really hard to score points. And when you take away the Pep Hamilton scheme, really, I think we're relying a lot on his brain and what he can put together to put us in good positions. And then Brandon Cooks, just how much attention he draws from the defense, how comfortable Davis Mills is playing next to him. When you lose those two factors, it's impossible to evaluate the offense, and much less the quarterback, who is so those are the two guys Mills works the most with. He's been with Pep Hamilton all offseason. This offseason was about creating a quarterback room that could support Mills, and everyone working in conjunction with Pep. And when we watched Davis Mills last year, Brandon Cooks is someone that makes him so comfortable. It's just too early to try to say we learned anything on Saturday, as much as I do think we learned other things about the team. But in terms of the quarterback position and the offense overall, I agree with you.
I think we learned that Jeff Driskel is really giving Kyle Allen a run for his money.
Okay, I think you're joking, but even if you're not, I actually thought Driskel played a really nice game, all things considered.
Yeah, I am totally joking. He did have a really good game. I mean, I think he's making his case that I belong, okay? I've not regressed. You know, I'm good for the quarterback room. Give me a chance. I mean, that's to me what he showed.
It's just a tough situation because they're not going to keep three quarterbacks almost certainly. And if it comes down to it, I think we would both prefer Kyle Allen on the roster just because he's started more games. We've seen him more consistently execute an offense at an NFL level. And even on Saturday, we saw some of the reasons that Jeff Driskel has struggled at the NFL level, some of the turnovers, some of the throws that he decided to make. But it was a really entertaining game. And that was my biggest concern about Saturday, is that it was going to be boring or at least impossible to evaluate the rest of the offense with him at the helm. And instead, we learned a lot.
Yeah, and he did throw those three interceptions. I thought it was interesting. He was able to bounce back and, execute a game-winning drive, which largely was due to the defense. They were able to get three takeaways. They were able to get five sacks. But, when I see veterans like Derek Rivers out there, and Tre'Von Smith, those are guys who have been in the league at least 4 years, and they're going against guys who, have kind of been on the practice squad their whole careers, or they're undrafted free agents. And so at a certain level, it's kind of like in Seinfeld when Kramer took the karate class with the 8-year-olds and got a black belt and stuff. But also, it did look like that the defense, the personnel, they got it. So even down to your lower levels of the defense, you see guys that comprehend, that get it, and are following through with Lovie Smith's teachings, which says more about the overall direction of the team. I don't know. How do you balance the variables that I presented?
I mean, so in Peter King's article this week, I think he put it in a very similar way, that the Texans won a meaningless game largely on the backbone of their bottom 30 being better than New Orleans' bottom 30. It is hard when this team does employ a lot of veterans. It's been a big part of Nick Caserio's strategy. It's been something that Lovie Smith really enjoys, having guys who have been around the National Football League and really know what they're doing. But what I do think is sustainable is the tendencies that we saw throughout the team. And what I mean by that is how they're coached. We saw it all three levels, whether it was the first team or the fourth team player. These guys are ripping at the football. They're playing fast. They're playing instinctively. I loved what we saw from the defensive line in terms of just how they got after the passer. I think those kind of things will translate, even if the talent advantages will not. And we know that's something the Texans are going to struggle with this year. So to just see that they came out and they're on fire, they're excited to play football. I mean, after 2020, I will never take for granted again watching a football team that wants to be out there and not a zombie. And I think that's something that I'm really appreciate about what this team looks like and what they're preaching they want to be, is that they care and they want to go play hard. And I do think they're really well coached. So I think that coaching translates. What do you see?
Yeah, well, that's why when Peter King put at the end of his little, feature on the Texans, that, well, you know, they may go 4-13 this year. How can you say that? I mean, they went 4-13 last year because they had a rookie Mills, a rookie coach. Tyrod Taylor is the answer. Just a lot of turmoil and guys that didn't want to be there. It was like their last chance saloon. And they just decided, you know what, I've had all my chances. Or give me another chance. Hit me. So, I mean, come on. 4-13 again. If they go 4-13, then they will have had some kind of horrendous luck in overtime games or the last 20 seconds of ball games or something. You know, because I just don't see them as being a 4-13 team. I think they're a 6-win team that's going to play playoff teams really close. You know, have a couple of, oh, they played the Chiefs real close and they almost, but Patrick Mahomes just chucked the ball to Juju Smith-Schuster and it was just amazing play. Like, I could see that happening, but I just don't see this being the same team record-wise. That's a bunch of injuries hit them.
Yeah, I think it strips away a lot of the context of this season versus last season when you say the same records. But I could see 4 wins. I guess I think the way that Houston plays people is going to be so different this year. How I expect them to be in games, so just how competitive it is, and something we might see. And this was before Damian Pierce really broke out. Is what I thought the 2020 or the 2022 Texans would look like is they'd be too dedicated to the run to start games. They'd get behind. They'd start to loosen up. Pep Hamilton's passing offense would open up, and they'd come and they'd cover a lot of spreads, even if they were going to lose. And I think that's going to be in strong contrast to a 2021 team where even if the record looks very similar as Peter King fought, it's the composition of the team, everything you just spoke about, it's different. I don't think these are guys who are going to get blown out. They actually have some talent. They have some playmakers who can make a difference this year. And they don't have enough yet. I agree with King's overall assessment that they're not true. The talent gap is too big for maybe the shock the world sentiment. But the matter of fact is they're going to play hyper-disciplined football, and they do have some difference makers on both sides that they're going to win. This is not a last-place team, in my opinion.
That's why when I saw Doug Fair from the Touchdown Wire, and this is before the Saints game, had Houston number 24 in the power rankings, I thought, there you go, because that's where I think they are. I think they're still in the 20s in terms of the power rankings, but I don't think they're competing with the Atlanta Falcons for the last spot on anyone's power rank. That's all you saw throughout the offseason. I'm talking even after the draft was, oh, well, you know, they're just going to be bad. And in our mock draft here, Houston, number one overall, goes with C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, it's nice that, at least for me, it was always pretty obvious that the Seahawks would be the worst team this year. And I feel like the national media is coming around to the fact that they're going to have the worst quarterback play in the league and are pretty poorly coached, or at least not offensively dynamic. I agree. The Falcons could be really bad. The Bears could be really bad. This is not the worst team in the NFL until proven otherwise. And it was just weird, discouraging for King to write them off like that.
Yeah, it was. All right, let me ask you this. So on Monday, Houston, they made 4 roster moves. They got to get down to 85 players by Tuesday at 3 p.m. Central Time. So on Monday, Chad Beebe, Jordan Jenkins, they release them. Long snapper, Harrison Elliott, running back B.J. Emmons, they are waived. What do you make of these moves?
Mark, am I missing something here? Because I really don't have any big takeaways from the cuts so far. I thought these were.
Yeah, I do. Jordan Jenkins, they've surpassed him. So they like what they've got on the edge. And then Chad Beebe, you know, he had that one target, that one drop. Then I write one article about how Jeff Driskel credited him setting up the game-winning drive with the fair catch, and then he gets cut. So that's my, that's my fault. I'm like the Jinx Malloy.
Yeah.
But it's really just kind of the trimming of the roster. They're going to do this every Tuesday till they get down to 53. But I think Jordan Jenkins, that's the big one. He signed the 2-year, $6 million contract. He thought he was going to make Houston his home because his dad retired here. Instead, only 11 games with the club. And he battled injuries. 2016 third round pick from Georgia, taken by the New York Jets. He's just one of those guys, one of those bridge guys to get you where you are now. And I think it's Jonathan Grenard's time, and that's partially why they let Jenkins go.
I mean, I don't even know if that has anything to do with Grenard. I think Grenard's our lock at one of the defensive end spots, probably that strong side spot. But what I think it might be is a testament just to the depth, possibly even more depth than Houston might have foreseen when they made that signing at the rest of the defensive end positions. Mario Addison, Jerry Hughes, Agbo Okoronkwo he had a great game on Saturday. There is a lot of depth at that defensive end spot. And that's a guy when he signed, like you said, it was a 2-year contract that someone you think is going to be around, and all of a sudden he's squeezed out. And then meanwhile, Chad, him getting beat out, I think that's just a younger guys outproducing him. I couldn't be super surprised, because all the noise out of camp is Weddington. And then I'm blank. Who caught the game winning touchdown on Saturday, Mark?
Johnny Johnson.
You've got a lot of young guys making plays early in the preseason, and I think he kind of got lost in the shuffle for more dynamic, younger options. So not terribly surprised, but it is interesting to see the process to begin and see what exactly Caserio and Lovie Smith are looking for and what they're going to value as we try to get down to 53.
Yeah, and I think to really have some encouragement about the team, you want to see, and you know, I said this about Royce Freeman early on in the offseason. I thought he'd be gone by now. I thought that someone would have played him out of a job through the offseason workouts and everything. That's just what you want to see, is you want to see the young guys just challenge these last chance saloon guys like Chad Beebe, and because if you can get younger on your roster, you know, it gives you a lot of flexibility going forward in terms of trying to keep these guys or maximize the returns relative to their rookie contracts. So, yeah, I think it was, like I said, with Jordan Jenkins, he was your bridge guy for last year, and now they've got it taken care of on the edge. And then, I mean, Harrison Elliott, he was a long snapper. I think it's good to just give him some reps so he can have that for his curriculum vitae. So everybody's looking for a long snapper at some point. And then BJ Emmons, this is just more of the trimming that goes on. I'll be interested to see what that final running back room looks like.
And I think it's funny you bring up a guy like Royce Freeman, someone who, I mean, when I think of Royce Freeman, I think of guys on the bubble of our fantasy leagues, and really one of the NFL's more average backs in an ideal room, you're probably not going to have him, but he is good enough that he sticks on teams. Right now, I don't think he'd make that room. I think it's going to be Pierce, Marlon Mack, Rex Burkhead, and they're going to want more special teams play out of whoever the fourth back they carry is, unless they want to have five. I think they want to have a fullback. I don't see them carrying five. So maybe a guy like Dare Agumbawale, as I could see being the fourth back.
Dare Agumbawale.
Agumbawale. I got to get better at some of these names, Mark. I struggle when we get on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, his sister plays for the Dallas Wings or something like that in the WNBA. So
well,
I'm habituated to it.
That's kind of cool. I did not know that one.
Yeah, so the running back room, it's interesting. Some of these guys have made it this far, you know?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, we got a long way to go. What, we came down to 85? Or we have to be down to 85 by tomorrow?
Right.
Okay. Because is the big cut the next week?
No, big cut is 2 weeks from now on the 30th.
And that's
2 weeks from tomorrow. A fortnight from tomorrow, as Anthony Wood might say.
Oh, bless him. But and will that be from 70 to 53?
Okay, here's how it goes. So 90 to 85 tomorrow, on the 23rd, 85 to 80, and then on the 30th, 80 to 53, which is still a really big, significant cut.
Wow.
And, you know, hard decisions are made.
That's 27. Yeah, that's a lot of guys.
Then you got to wait for these guys to not get claimed, and then at 11 a.m. Central Time on the 31st, so basically the next day after the cuts, you can sign them to your roster, your practice squad. So that's where things are at for the next 2 weeks.
I think cuts are going to be really interesting for Houston this year. I know it's not on our topic list, but just to quickly put it this way, I think Houston's going to be watching what guys get cut from other rosters, especially at some of the weaker positions like wide receiver and tight end. Because, I mean, there are some teams that are absolutely loaded there, guys who just are not going to make those teams that Houston could look at. And I kind of expect Nick Caserio to be active about. He's not – I mean, obviously we have to cut guys, but I don't think he's done bringing in guys either. So the cuts every week, I'm going to be watching closely, not just for Houston, but, hey, who is not making other teams? And are those the kind of guys we could look for? Because the bottom of the roster – at least in Houston, has a lot of potential for turnover.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of just the magic that Nick Caserio works, is trying to acquire guys from other rosters that you may not think of, but suddenly excel. Oh, like Blake Cashman.
Yeah, I love the Blake Cashman story. This team needs more linebackers that have not played in the league for a long time. I'm all about Blake Cashman winning over the coaching staff.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, that's kind of what you need. So he has a good game. Obviously, you want to see Blake Cashman continue to build on his success against the Rams. But what else do you want to see against the Rams when Houston takes on the defending Super Bowl champions Friday night with a 9 p.m. Central Time kickoff, 10 o'clock in Atlanta, John?
Well,
10 o'clock in Atlanta.
I'm going to be at the Braves-Astros game, so I will be watching for Twitter commentary for the most part on this one. But I think I'll go both sides of the ball. So on defense, what I'd like to see, it was a little disappointing to see how the defense, a lot of people did get pulled after that first drive where Andy Dalton kind of chopped them up. And it looked like the defense, I don't know if it was because Dalton came out or because the defense settled, but I would like to see a more cohesive, less of an up-down performance based on the quarterback against the Rams. I doubt Stafford plays. McVay never plays his guys. But John Walford's about as good as any backup quarterback you're going to see in this league. Just, and he's not Andy Dalton, but just go and be consistent. Do not get killed on the first drive. And then on the opposite hand for the offense, I would kind of like to see them open up the playbook just a little bit. I don't want to give away anything significant. I don't want to give away the secrets of the trade for Pep Hamilton's offense, but give Davis Mills an opportunity to succeed and put together a scoring drive. Do not run Marlon Mack up the middle for a negative gain and throw a screen pass. You say he's really talented. The reports are glowing. Let him get some confidence. Let him throw the ball down the field. He doesn't need to play a lot, but when we are in there, I'd like him to be given the opportunity to actually show what he can do. And then, of course, just a few individuals. Christian Harris, hopefully he'll get to play. We'll see if Stingley does. I know Lovie Smith talked about it. That playmaking from Jalen Petrie, how can you not want to see it? But he's not exactly a guy I worry about And if Dameon Pierce can continue this momentum, I know this was the first topic we talked about and one that our Twitter audience I had not logged on yet for, but if Pierce is that guy, it's a different offense. Until further notice, he feels like the storyline to watch in the preseason. Mark, what are your big takeaways you're looking for in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I'd like to see them open it up with Davis Mills. You don't have to use any of the concepts or anything that are unique to this offense. If there's any crossover with Tim Kelly's offense, just some plays that Davis Mills already ran that are on tape, go ahead and run those against the Rams. And then I don't know that I would want to see Dameon Pierce in the first team offense until it matters, because that's just so much of a weapon. I'd rather save it for September. Maybe get Brandon Cooks some looks, let him have some action, just to see how he's moving. I want to see Stingley, but if he may be someone that they're also saving until the regular season, though I doubt it. I think they play Stingley in the third preseason game.
I do too. I do too.
And just basically, I'm sorry to not have just a complete list of things I want to see, but I think that's it. I think the backup quarterback situation, you know what you have in Kyle Allen and Jeff Driskel. If they don't play Dameon Pierce a lot in this game, I think that that's okay. I know they put him on special teams, but I think he's shown enough running the football that I don't feel like he needs to continue to get those particular reps. Maybe keep him in on some pass protection.
See, Mark, I feel like those conflate, though, because if we're not going to play Pierce a lot, I would like to see him behind the first team offensive line and there to protect Davis Mills, there to catch dump off passes, put him with a unit that you're going to expect him to operate with as soon as the season starts. Do you think that's fair? If we are going to get the reps?
Yeah, I guess I'm too much into protecting Dameon Pierce because I'm going to need to ride him for 17 games. I mean, I do. If I were the coach, I would start him week one against the Indianapolis Colts. Just throw off all the chains. No more mincing words. No more ambiguity. He's the guy. And we're going to give him the ball 25 times a game. Okay, that's unrealistic. But we're going to give him 25 touches a game.
So, but that point, Brent, the fact that 25 touches is unrealistic, this brings me to a minor point, and it's not second.
No, 25 carries.
25 carries.
25 touches includes passes, passes that you catch. Okay, 25 touches out of 38 offensive snaps. How's that?
I'm fine with that, but I think my point that I was going to make is that I'd also really – I do want to keep giving Marlon Mack opportunities. He's a guy who did not really get to touch the ball last season in Indianapolis. Didn't get asked to do a lot just because he fell out of favor between Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines, and the third guy needed to play special teams. He's talented, and he's coming off this injury. Keep working him back into live football. Give him opportunity, because in a perfect world, as much as we're all excited that Dameon Pierce could be the guy, you need a second punch with your running back room, because once you get too heavy on one guy, not only are you taking away from Pierce's potential shelf life, but you're also taking away from what he can give you in the biggest moments when you're going to need it. So I'd like to see Mack build some positive momentum, because, I mean, 3 carries for 6 yards, not what we were hoping to see. I think he's got more than that left, and I'm sure they did too when they signed him.
Yeah, I don't mind if they saddle up Mack in a preseason game. And this might be the perfect one to do it, just in terms of recovery time and getting ready for the Colts game. They probably should saddle up just for his own confidence, just for Mack's own confidence. Exactly. They ought to saddle him up.
Yeah. And that's what I kind of mean. Like, a guy who hasn't gotten to play football, has had success, but coming off the injury, let him start to build back and believe in himself in the same capacity that he did when he ran for 1,000 yards in 2020 or 2019.
Yeah, and how unfortunate is that? But, I mean, that was a lot of guys' stories for 2020 was it's week one, and it's not that you roll an ankle. It's boom, you pop an Achilles. It's week three, and boom, a herniated disc, or just it's week four, and boom, an ACL. I mean, that happened to a lot of guys in 2020. And, you know, unfortunately for Mac, it happened, and then Jonathan Taylor happened. So, in large part, that's Bill O'Brien's fault, because he took Ross Blacklock instead of Jonathan Taylor. Because if that would have happened, then Mac could have probably won back his position in 2021.
Mark, I'm going to go into a clinical depression if we talk about the Jonathan Taylor one pick after Houston. I can't. I'm not strong enough to do that tonight.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I got to stop listening to these Nick Caserio press conferences and his appearances on Sports Radio 6. It's not really listening to them, John. It's transcribing them, because that means I'm having to listen to them three times as long as anyone else in the world. And so it's almost like hypnopedia, but that's where you learn falling asleep. But it's like a hypnosis of taking on Nick Caserio quotes subconsciously, and I don't even know it.
I was going to ask, do you think that you learn a lot in the Caserio press conferences? Because I feel like I always walk away. I feel good. I feel really good about the team, and I think about why I feel good, and I can't really pin it down.
Yes. What you learn and what people aren't picking up on yet is how he reacts to these situations gives you tape for how he's going to react when these situations arise again. Does that make sense? Disgruntled player, big contract, wants to get traded. Here's what he said from January of 2021 to March of 2022. What's he saying now in the same situation? Do you see the same verbiage?
That's interesting. That's very interesting. That was a hypothetical, right? You're not asking me. I don't think I've spent near the time with those transcripts as you have.
No. I'm just saying that everybody's saying, oh, Nick Caserio says nothing. He's saying paragraphs of nothing. Now, again, I think I made this analogy before, but in Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, you know, Americans are more familiar with 1984, George Orwell, where the state suppressed the information from the people. But in Brave New World, all the information was there. All the truth was there. It's just that the corporations and the state mixed it in with trivial and meaningless messages. And that's what I'm saying is, in those paragraphs, he's given you enough rope for what may happen in 2024, 2025.
Mark, you totally lost me with that comparison. I love you, brother, but that was too much for me. But I think I understand your big point, that we get a glimpse inside the brain of Caserio, even if he doesn't say a lot. What he does say offers a window into how he's going to really react to when things are – it's pretty low stake right now for Houston. No one expects them to win a lot, but that's going to change slowly but surely, and we're going to get to see, okay, how will the GM respond to these situations, these greater stakes in the future?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's what I hate about it, is because – I'm transcribing Caserio. I'm having to listen to him three times longer than anybody else. And subconsciously, all of his phrases and everything are getting dumped into my lexicon. So then I'm talking to girls, you know, on those dating apps and stuff. I'm using Nick Caserio lines to like answer the questions and, you know, not give too much away. But again, like I said, I'm probably like Caserio is manufacturing enough rope for 2024 and 2025.
All right, Mark, we got to wrap this one up with you talking about using Nick Caserio pickup lines on the dating apps. That was not what I expected to hear tonight.
Well, you know, that's the way it is sometimes. Sometimes the buffet shuts down and you got to go home and pay your tab.
I was going to say, for those of you listening live tonight that have not listened to the podcast before, Mark finds a way to compare everything on the Houston Texans roster to food. It's pretty incredible the great lengths that he goes to make these comparisons. And Mark, I'm glad you snuck that one in there at the end of the night.
Yeah, you didn't think we were going to get out of here without a food analogy, did you?
I kind of did. I really thought we were in the clear, but you got it. Well done. Very well done.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter at TheRealMarkLane and settexanswire.usatoday.com as your homepage. Follow John on Twitter at John H. Crumpler. And there's another one coming, John. There's another preseason game coming, and then it'll be on us, Texans Colts, in September.
That it will. And just a final word to our Twitter audience before I close this out. This is the first time I tried doing this. Mark and I are trying to find a way to live stream the podcast, and hopefully one day it would be great to get the audience involved. We're trying to play with that and figure out how both of us can be live on the mic. Right now, it was just us recording over our same software and then having this there. So feel free. My DMs are open. Let me know how this sounded, what could be better, if it was good, if it was terrible. But thanks for listening tonight. And as usual for the podcast listeners, have a great morning.